Hey, everybody, this is Gina Tremurco.
And Rachel Tipton.
And we are
Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the new podcast that does what?
Makes sales sexy again.
What's this podcast about, Rachel?
It's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks, and it's filled with laughter, random chatter, practical advice, and some serious stuff.
It's not just for women, though, right?
No, it's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks for men and for women.
Listen to us on the Sell or Die Network,
womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, and anywhere that you can find podcasts. And
be sure to subscribe, comment, share our podcast, and give us a review. Tune in and listen to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again.
You've been warned.
Yeah, so I guess the real answer is you don't, because I didn't. instead, I turned those habits into getting distracted by girls and partying.
That's horrible.
Yeah, I really lost my way between about 18 and 24.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying, because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up, but first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die.
Diehards, Mike Metzger is an author, professional speaker, and entrepreneur. He's been featured on MarketWatch, Business Insider, Yahoo Finance, and The Wall Street Journal for running one of the fastest growing digital marketing agencies on the East Coast. He's also been named by Entrepreneur Magazine as one of the top 10 most influential people of 2018. Oh, my God. I'm so excited he's here. Say hello to Mike Metzger.
Come on. You know, when someone – welcome, Mike, and diehards, welcome,
you.
Mike. But when you're a top comedian, someone will say something funny. And when you're a top influencer, I wonder if anybody has ever said to you, come on, say something influential. Come on, influence me, you bastard.
Oh, man. Yeah. I think it's different because comedian, there's a different expectation.
Yeah, but obviously your actions make you more influential as much as your words do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you're doing and how you're growing and what your footprint is, not your carbon footprint, of course, your normal, regular old footprint in the digital space, which I think has no carbon.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. But that speaks volumes for you. You don't have to say a damn word. You just type everything and it starts going.
So that's huge. I want to get into how you became one of the top 10 most influential people of 2018. But first, let's Let's talk about how you got started in digital marketing. Like, what? How'd you get there?
Yeah, it's a funny story. It was never really like a goal. It just, I don't want to say it just kind of happened because that just makes it sound easy. But I've always been very tech savvy. You know, so as a teenager, first I had like a rough childhood. So I built the habit of just taking care of myself, you know, just always taking the initiative to do whatever I had to do. If I needed to eat, you know, at 10 years old, I was figuring it out, whether I was walking to the gas station to get food. You know, I used to take the public bus to school. You know, we mentioned before the show that I was born and grew up, you know, young in New York, but where I really grew up as an early kid was in Florida, in Orlando, in kind of a rough area. So I just kind of instilled these habits of just always knowing that if I didn't look out for myself, no one else was going to do that for me, you know? And for fun, you know, I'd pull apart stereos and computers, and usually they would never go back together again. So I'd break them most of the time. But the point is, I've always been very tech savvy. I like the electronics. I like the internet. I like technology. And growing into my early teens, I kind of recognized an opportunity with MySpace, actually. And I noticed that everybody wanted a cool layout for their MySpace page. So I started building MySpace layouts for my friends, and I would charge them $100 or $200. And then I also love music a lot. A lot of my friends were musicians and in bands, and I also tried to be in a band, was never very good. But bands always needed the same thing. You know, they needed a layout to complement their MySpace page, you know, much like a Facebook business page today. But back then, I started learning the basics of, you know, HTML and your basic coding. And once probably about 15, 16 in high school, instead of taking Spanish class or workshop, I took computer programming and graphic design and art classes. So the way that I get into marketing really started as a designer almost, which is funny because now I don't really do design work. I have developers and designers that work for me that do that type of stuff. I'm not really the head of design. And in reality, I don't even think I'm that good at design. I'm much more of a marketer. But that's really what I think led me down the path of really having an interest and a passion for marketing.
I think, though, if you didn't know the fundamentals of all of your business goings on, having the design, having the HTML, and having all that ground, fundamental, foundational information, you could never run the company. And so what all you did was evolve yourself out of a job by finding replacements for you along the way. And now you're the king of digital marketing on the East Coast. I wonder how far the East Coast goes. Did it go, like, does it go past Pittsburgh? What's the geography? Is it like Mississippi East or what's the deal? But I think for those of us who have grown up in the Philadelphia, New York City metropolitan area, we know what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's the asshole capital of the world.
and we're proud of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, okay, so you take these courses in high school. You learn these skills. How do you turn that into a business? And was it always easy?
Yeah, so I guess the real answer is you don't, because I didn't. instead, I turned those habits into getting distracted by girls and partying.
That's horrible.
Yeah, I really lost my way between about 18 and 24. I was captain of the high school wrestling team and kind of did the design stuff on the side, and that was all good. But when I turned 18 or 19, I moved in to a house with my best friend, and we became roommates, and we started partying and drinking all the time. His dad was like big time landlord and real estate flipper guy. And he gave us a house to stay in, and we started working for him. And I always look back at that because although I started partying and just kind of being an idiot, I learned a lot about how an office runs by really being like the administrative assistant to this other guy, Mike, that I worked for, which is my good friend's dad. You know, I became the guy who was answering the phone, responding to emails, setting appointments, driving out to meet people to show them properties. And I had never had any experience like that ever before, really. I had always just kind of done my own thing. And I think so that was it.
I think it's funny when you're a younger person, you grow into idiocy. You weren't like born an idiot, but you get there as quickly as you could. So by 18, you become a full-fledged idiot. And and some people don't lose it ever.
Yeah,
you know, you can see them in Austin, Texas. They're riding their bicycles with their tie-dyed T-shirts on and their ponytail. But you seem to have found your way. When did you realize, hey, it's time for me to stop being an idiot?
Yeah, so and as a side note, too, one time I made this video on YouTube, and it said, why being stupid will make you rich. Mm-hmm. You guys will have to check it out. It plays to that point. You know, it's just so true. Like, you kind of become stupider as you go along, but you can kind of use it as an advantage, too. And I've always kind of stood behind the statement of being so dumb is kind of what was so fortunate for me, because I just believed that I could do it. But to answer your question, which I forgot what the question was.
When did you stop becoming an idiot?
Oh, 24. 24 years old. I was living in this house that was falling apart. The bathroom in the house, I had two roommates, and the bathroom in the house was like collapsing through the ceiling. My rent was $100 a month. I used to like hide from my landlord because I never had the cash to pay it. I was a bartender. And all the money that I had was going towards, you know, drinking or drugs or partying. My credit was terrible.
It's a good investment.
For what my objectives were at the time.
Exactly. You know,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But right around my 24th birthday, I was really, I guess you'd say lucky. You know, I was fortunate because just the right things happened at the right time. I was in a really unhealthy relationship that like kind of came to an end. I found out that the girl that I was dating had another life in DC and was pregnant and engaged to somebody else, right? So I thought that I was the boyfriend. Turns out like I was the other guy. I had been dating this person for like 2 years or over 2 years. So that happened. I also started to recognize that my current friend group at the time was kind of pissing me off. And really, I started to notice that they didn't have my best interest at heart. You know, they were kind of leading me down the wrong direction. And when it came to important things, they didn't have my back, you know, and they weren't actual friends. And I think I was starting to recognize that. I had to do 4 weekends in jail for driving on a suspended license because I was always behind financially. So I just kept, and this was over the course of probably from about 18 to 24, just once every couple of years, I would just be in a bad situation. I get pulled over and I didn't have a license or I didn't have insurance or I didn't pay past tickets. And that just kept happening to me because of my own fault, of course. And I had to pay for it. You know, so I had to do these 4 weekends in jail. And at that same time, I had a talk with my dad, you know, just all within the same month or so. I had a talk with my dad and he had talked to me about being a bartender. And he said, look, have you considered going to trade school? You know, what is your next move here? Because eventually, you're going to have to stop being a bartender. Like, you don't want to be one of those people who just bartends your whole life, you know, and eventually you're going to get uglier, you're going to get fatter, and you're going to make less tips. So the more you do it, only the less you're going to get paid. And
I love that.
And yeah.
Sound
and on
wisdom.
On a more positive note, two things happened. I met a girl named Brooke, and I was also introduced to the world of network marketing. Two things that I never had before in my life was a good woman other than my mother. And my stepmother, but never had any good, you know, solid relationships or friendships. And Brooke filled the void for both of those. Eventually she became my girlfriend, and she still is this day, but she became a very good friend. And for the first time I felt like I could be honest and talk about my issues and stuff. Whereas before I always tried to hide that stuff. I had a very big problem with lying. I would lie about everything because I just wasn't happy. So I would lie and tell people that I went to college. I would lie and tell people that, you know, I was in a band, like, you know, some famous band. I would just make stuff up and I don't even know why I did it, but I think it was truly because I wasn't happy. The second thing, I was introduced to network marketing and I was never very good at that. But what it did do was it introduced me to the world of kind of thinking a bit more positively, understanding that I could accomplish things, because in network marketing, it's one of the only places where you can meet, young kids that are, you know, making a bunch of money and stuff. And even if they aren't actually making money, they'll definitely tell you that they are. And that's where I believed it. You know, I was dumb enough to believe it. And when I looked at some of these people, I'd think to myself, well, if these guys are making money like that, why couldn't I do that? You know, there was nothing visually to me that stood out about them. They just seemed like a normal guy, just like me. They just maybe kind of had their shit together a little bit more. So all of that was like a huge shift for me when I was 24, and it all happened within, you know, a 30-day period. And so I served these 4 weekends in jail. And when I got out, well, and while I was there, while I was in, I was in a community pod, you know, so I wasn't in like a jail cell. You know, I went in for the weekend and I shared a pod, you know, that had 20 or 30 other guys in it. You know, and you had like a bunk bed, and I was able to bring a book in. And so Brooke gave me a book called The Power, which is kind of the sequel to The Secret. And so I read them in opposite order, which is funny, but I read the Power. And when I left, you know, when I checked out of jail, and had my buddies come pick me up, funny enough, that day they had like a little networking party where, you know, you go to these houses and you talk about network marketing products or whatever. But I just remember leaving and thinking like, man, I read this book and now I should probably focus on being a little bit more positive. And then I went to this event, you know, and people are talking about their products and getting excited. And I feel like all that stuff that happened at once just kind of, I don't want to say solidified a new direction for me, but it really got me thinking in the right direction. And from there, I was just forced to take action because we ended up getting kicked out of that house. So it was almost like I never really said, okay, I'm going to stop doing this and I'm going to stop doing that. It was just all the right things aligned for me to where I didn't have a choice, you know. In a good way, these things fell in my lap. But from there forward, I just had to start running and just start going in a new direction, no matter what that meant. And for a short period of time, just for about 6 or 7 months or so, I gave network marketing a shot. Was never very successful. But again, it established kind of the power of positive thinking. And honestly, getting back into the habit of using sales and working for myself, you know, doing my own thing again. And I think it kind of reignited what I was excited about when I was younger, when I was a teenager, to make that story come full circle. But that's really, that's when things changed for me. I was 24 years old and today I'm 29.
Hey everybody, this is Jeff Bajorek from the Why on the Buy podcast, wishing nothing but the best for you and yours this holiday season as we roll into 2019. Christy and I have some really exciting stuff in store for you as we head into January and beyond, and we cannot wait to share it with you. So as you head into this new year and you think about all the promise that is ahead, remember, when you know your why, your hows and your whats get much better.
And what did you do once you got over network marketing? What did you put your teeth into?
So I switched into more of an affiliate marketing role. So rolling into 2015, I got into more like digital and affiliate stuff. And I didn't know that that was a thing. You know, if somebody would have told me back then that, hey, you know, you can sign up as an affiliate for Best Buy or Amazon, you know, I just didn't know that. I didn't know anybody knew that or could do that. So that concept was really interesting to me because that was a much more comfortable topic. I was familiar with computers. I was used to being online and looking at blogs and forums. I was much more comfortable with that idea versus trying to call up friends and family and stuff because nobody respected me back then. You know, everybody knew me as just, you know, the idiot partying kid. So network marketing was really, really tough for me. But when I was able to almost use the internet as a shield to create kind of like a barrier, let's say a blog, right? That blog doesn't have to have anything to do with me. And I can use that as a tool and an asset to generate income. And when I started to understand those concepts, that's when I think I really got excited about, you know, digital marketing. And it's a lot about how I learned the skills that I use with my clients today is because I actually did it first for myself, you know, as a one-man show. But so that's what I shifted into. I created a blog called The Social Campus, which is still up today. And before, I used to use the blog and I would create a webinar and, I had a product that was like $200 and it taught people, how to growth hack like their Instagram and their Twitter and their Snapchat and stuff. Just all based on things that I had learned and what I was currently doing. And so I would learn how to drive traffic to this stuff. And I was lucky because I really caught that trend before everybody started doing it. You know, now everybody's familiar with the term webinar, but in 2015, just a few short years ago, nobody really knew those concepts. The only people doing them were like really the industry leaders, you know, guys like Russell Brunson. And I think of Lewis Howes. I remember seeing their ads all the time for webinars, you know, and now everybody's doing them and those guys have almost, you know, moved on a little bit. But I was lucky because I caught that trend, started to learn webinars using blogs, using YouTube, using social media to start driving traffic. And I would just sign up for affiliate networks and affiliate products. I would go on Canva and create a little banner ad that would have my affiliate link to it and just put it on my blog. you know, and wasn't making crazy money, but it was the first time that I recognized that it could happen and that I could do it. So shifted into affiliate and digital marketing in 2015.
And when you say you weren't making much money, just like a few bucks here and there, or a few hundred bucks here and there, a few thousand bucks here and there?
Yeah. So in 2014, in October, when I first got started, I just became obsessed with it and started running webinars. And I think like 1 month I made probably around like 2,000 bucks. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was crazy. And one thing, if you don't know me and anybody listening is, I mean, until I was almost 25 years old, I had never in my entire life had more than maybe like 300 bucks in the bank at any given time. You know, and I mean, that was like the height of my income. You know, I never had good financial habits. So even when I had a normal job, whether I was working at Walgreens or Buffalo Wild Wings, you know, I'd get a paycheck and I'd spend it and get a paycheck and I'd spend it. I'd get a credit card, I'd max it out, and then it would end up being canceled and I'd ruin my credit. I don't know why I did that. You know, I don't know why, but that was the habits that I had. So
you did it because you're an American.
Yeah, well, true.
that's part of our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, so I did that until I was almost 25 years old. So making even $1,000 in a month or 2,000 bucks in a month was massive for me. It broke a lot of my limiting beliefs and I started to understand like, holy cow, I could actually do this. So October 2014, I'll remember that month forever because it was the first time I felt like, wow, I actually made what most people would consider a full-time income in a month. Now, from then forward, not every month was like that. You know, things really went back down towards the end of the year and it took me until probably spring of 2015 to really feel like I could get a grasp on what I was doing and make it more consistent. So when I talk about, you know, barely making money, my rent, I had finally got my own place for the first time in my whole life in 2015, probably around like March, I think. And my rent was, I think it was $897. And Brooke had moved in with me. And I remember that we were struggling to pay that, you know, so it was probably right around just barely what we needed to get by, you know, $1,000 a month or so. She was full time in school, getting back into going to college. She's a nuclear engineer. And so, you know, she was working towards her schoolwork every hour of every day. So while she was doing that, I was either at home or walking to Starbucks or walking to the college campus to borrow the Wi-Fi to just keep working on this stuff. And I remember we just barely had enough. So, you know, I don't know exactly what the dollar figure is, but it was probably right around $1,000 a month. And that was really about it, give or take.
So how did the transformation take place? Because, you know, now you're talking about barely making it.
And it's only 3 years ago.
In your intro, we mentioned that you were one of the top 10 most influential people. Those are like two totally different spectrums. How do you get from there to top 10?
Yeah, so that's probably the most exciting part of my story and what I usually share. And there's two things to note too. Number one is what I do has been an everyday effort. I mean, I'm here at my office, but I'll be here till the sun goes down most of the time. I'm the first one here usually, and I'm here all day. You know, I cut out every friend that I had. You know,
that's the only way.
Friend or not real friend.
Yeah.
You work your ass off and you become lucky all of a sudden.
Yeah. No, it's very true. So, I mean, it's been an everyday effort for, you know, at least three years, really since I started at 24. I can't think of a time that I've really stopped. You know, mm-hmm. I really haven't. And it's not because I'm trying to do that. It's, you know, it's just part of, I like to produce stuff. You know, I just like to be a producer. I like to get things done. It drives me crazy. And it's funny because I was never like that before. I don't know what switch really turned on. I really think that it was a combination of being unhealthy, being around the wrong people. And when I slowly got rid of that stuff and started to educate myself by reading books, watching videos, starting to follow different people, I think it just kind of, not ignited, but just kind of made me aware of people doing that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to emulate that. But to answer your question, and it's perfect because we're kind of rolling through the timeline, but in 2015, I had the fortune of meeting a guy named Adam Wenig. Now, to give you some hindsight or insight too, Adam Wenig at 21 was doing over $1 million a year. And I used to watch him on stage. And I remember I borrowed money from my girlfriend's parents, and we borrowed their van to drive from here in Virginia 13 hours to Miami to go to this event. And I remember when I pulled up, there was an Aston Martin sitting outside of the hotel. And I had heard that Adam drove an Aston Martin, and I followed him on social media. I watched all of his videos. I had never met the guy. And if you scroll way back on my Instagram, you'll actually see where I posted a photo of his car and I tagged him, you know, and I never met the guy, you know, I was kind of idolizing him in a sense. And I tagged him and I was like, you know, wow, look at this guy driving an Aston Martin at 21. And then I went into the event. We sat there for the 2 days. We watched him and a bunch of other really great speakers talk. And this was, all, you know, this was a while ago. This is when I was kind of phasing out of the network marketing stuff, but I watched him as a speaker. Fast forward, and during the summer of 2015, my little brother, who works with me here at the agency, he's the head of our advertising, he was sitting next to Adam at this event, at this e-commerce event, just randomly. And he didn't really recognize him. And so my brother sends me a text, and he was like, I'm sitting next to this guy. I swear I recognize him, but I don't know where I met him from. And I was like, well, introduce yourself, see if you can get his name. And so he did. And he was like, his name's Adam Wenig. And I said, dude, that's the guy that we used to go and watch on stage. And he was like, well, I'm sitting next to him at this Amazon e-commerce event. And I said, wow. So we sat next to him during that whole event. They got to know each other. They became friends. And Adam mentioned that he was running I think he was selling water filters at the time. It was like these high-end water filters that sold for anywhere from like two to like almost like 9,000 bucks a piece, like water ionizers, like full home, you know, things. And Adam was talking about how he had so many leads, but nobody to close the deal, you know? And my brother happened to mention, he said, well, hey, my older brother Mike's a pretty decent salesperson. Maybe I could put you in touch and he could help you out. So that's when a lot changed for me. So he texted me and said, hey, I gave Adam your number and he said he's going to call you. And I said, okay. So I waited for like 2 weeks. You know, I waited for 2 weeks. And finally the guy calls me and I'm talking to him and whoever else was on the phone was like his assistant at some point. But I talked to him and he said, hey, you know, we're running these Facebook ads and we're generating leads for people, you know, who want to get healthier and want to buy these water filters. But we don't have anybody that can, you know, call them and follow a script. And I said, okay, well, I'll do it. I was decent at sales, but I definitely wasn't qualified to be like, you know, some sort of high ticket sales closer guy. So, excuse me. So when I got the opportunity, I said, okay, well, I really need to get on top of my sales game. So I sat down and went through like every sales program I could find. I went through Jordan Belfort's Straight Line Persuasion. I went through Cardone University. I went through like all kinds of different stuff to try and learn whatever I could. So he gave me the script and I just started trying to figure out how to talk to people, figure out what their goals were, figured out, you know, if the product made sense for them and sell it to them. And so that was kind of what changed financially for me. It's what changed getting into a different circle of people. It's what changed getting the experience and the opportunity to learn advertising with someone else's budget because I didn't have thousands of dollars to spend on ads. So I started helping with the sales side of things and handling the phone appointments. And the more that I did that and building a friendship with Adam, he brought me into the advertising picture and I started to learn how to run Facebook ads, how to build out, you know, ClickFunnels pages, how to learn Google advertising. And then of course that expanded into all kinds of other channels. But that was what changed for me was being able to find the right person who had a budget to actually spend money on advertising and be able to practice sales and see the whole process from behind the curtain. And a lot of things clicked for me and I started to learn a lot of stuff that I never knew before. And so that was probably what changed, at least financially. And then once I had money, I was able to invest into all kinds of other stuff.
Tell me about your sales career, though. Were you able to close the $5,000 deal?
Yeah. And that was actually, so I made my first six figures in probably the very end of 2015, rolling into 2016. Was able to actually look at the bank and look at my total deposits, and it was over $100,000. And I would accredit that definitely to that exact process. And selling over the phone.
Did you find yourself to be like a people person or a salesperson?
I'm probably more of a salesperson. I think even like my friends that I'm like personable with, you know, they know that I just like sales, you know, and not even that I like sales. I think I dislike people who don't think they're selling. Mm-hmm. I think that's a better description.
Yeah.
Like, I recently spoke at this event and there was another speaker and I won't call him out, but
come on, what's it rhyme with?
No.
I don't even remember the guy's name, to be totally honest with you. But but I just remember watching him speak, and he was so like terrified of saying that he was selling something. And he did it so much that he was trying to affirm that he wasn't selling anything. He keeps saying like, I'm not selling anything. I'm not selling anything. And I hate that.
Yeah.
And I hate that because everything is such a transaction, you know, whether you're, you know, trying to get a girl to like you, or you're trying to get a discount on a product, or you're trying to, you know, whatever, it's all a transaction of emotion.
Trying to get a bank loan.
Exactly. Yeah. Even when you're the one buying.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
For sure. I think the interesting part about your story is when you said that you're not, you know, you weren't qualified to do these sales yet, and you didn't really know much about sales, but you made the first sale, which was yourself. You sold Adam on hiring you, and that part of it to me is huge, right?
But you also had the personal belief system that you could do it.
Right.
And, you know, someone gives you a challenge and you go, shit, I can do that. and then you do. I may not be able to do it right now, but I can see myself doing it. I believe in myself enough to be able to get it done. And that's a big thing. Let me explain something just so there's a little tie in here. When you started out with network marketing, those people are a bunch of believers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They believe in their attitude. Some of them believe in the product, but a lot of them are there just for the money. But I can tell you that if you associate with the right people at the right time in network marketing, and I'll tell the story later, but I can tell you it's the springboard that every single person should have.
100%.
Because you don't – everyone who's there – there's no negative Nellies there.
No.
You walk into a network marketing, everybody's on fire. They're doing their thing. I listened to this. I read that. And whatever the thing – like in your time, it was The Secret. In my time, it was Think and Grow Rich. But it was always something that was positive, and you know, listening to Earl Nightingale or listening to Zig Ziglar or Herb True or whoever the people were that you listened to, those are your mentors. You don't know them, they don't know you, but they're your Jesus of success.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So when you're challenged by that guy to learn sales, you go, shit, I can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't say you couldn't.
No.
You just said you would. And then you go, all right, I got to figure something out now. I got this job. I got better figure out how to do it.
Well, and I've always felt that. Like, and I feel like I still try to challenge myself to jump into stuff and figure it out later, because I've always found that those are the best results, really. You know, I almost look for those opportunities. So me and my brother have this ongoing joke. We call these people, they're getting ready to get ready, right? And A lot of network marketers are like that. And so I do think that there's definitely some value you can take away from that industry. And I'm fortunate that I did. And I didn't pick up the habits of like all this other stuff, because people are like that. They're like, oh, well, I'm going to buy every course out there and then I'm never going to go through them. You know, I'm going to go to every single event and write down every possible, you know, note, set of notes that I get from every speaker.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to do anything with it.
In between getting ready and getting ready to get ready is where the money is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and the problem is they're studying so hard that they're not taking action, but you took action, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So
I've had this – sorry, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I've had the same people messaging me for, you know, 3 years, and they're just stuck on the same thing, and it's just mind-blowing to me. I've never understood how you can communicate with people and, you know, follow somebody's Facebook feed and see them moving forward and not almost like draw parallels from that and say, okay, well, this person is there.
Yeah.
And I'm still right here. Like, that's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
They have no balls.
Yeah.
And
no,
they absolutely. I mean, you can say whatever you want, but New York City, you have no choice but to grow balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, someone chops your balls off.
Thank you for the image.
Yeah, you're a eunuch.
So let's fast forward to today. You build brands for a living. That's like your core business, right? What are some of the things that our salespeople should be, our diehards out there, what should they be doing to build their online brand, their online reputation?
Yeah, it's a great question. So personally, I'm actually still in the middle of this. You know, I'm still in the middle of really understanding. And like you guys kind of noticed, like my journey has been a short one, you know, and I am aware enough to recognize that I'm fortunate that I've found a lot of success in a very short amount of time, but I've worked for it. You know, just like you said, like I have the audacity and almost the dumbness to just keep working. But that also means that I'm...
Don't say dumbness. You have the moxie and you have the talent to be able to make it happen. I think that's a better description of it.
Huh? Yeah, and the persistence.
I agree. Yeah. I like what Chet Holmes says. Maybe a better way to describe it would be like the pig-headed discipline. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go for that.
My personal opinion of it is that you see something and grasp for it, and you do what's necessary to get from where you are to where the grasp is. And somehow, you know, you always end up with that brass ring in your hand. Yeah. And then you see another brass ring and you go, shit, I can get that one. I get this one. I know I can take the next one.
Yeah.
And that's how you got to be top 10.
I'm picturing a Nintendo game where you keep going from the next world to the next world.
Finally get to the secret
opening
entrance.
Opening up more worlds.
it's definitely been a lot like that, you know, really. But to answer your question, I think some of the things that I share with salespeople is, you know, creating a story for you as an individual is actually a lot harder than creating a story for like a brand or like a company. At least that's how I feel in my experience. That's how it's been, you know, for me and for us. I think there's not as much pressure riding on it. You know, when you start a company or something, you're almost creating this persona of like, who are we? And you have all these different variables and options to choose from, which makes it easier. But I think when you're trying to craft your own story, you know, whether you're a consultant or a real estate agent or, you know, one of these influencers or whatever, it's a lot harder to come up with like a real, you know, craft your story in a way that really impacts people. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. You know, even some, and it's funny too, because I go up and I speak at these events and I walk off the stage feeling like I did a terrible job because I know what my goals are when I get up there. And then sometimes it doesn't go the way that I planned. But then when I step off the stage, people always say, man, I'm so glad that you shared, you know, whatever it might be, whether I'm talking about advertising or my book or my story.
You share humility, and that's a very rare thing to share from the platform.
Yeah.
Most people share their Lamborghini and their 14-inch wiener, and you are talking literally about, you know, how you needed food.
Yeah, and I try not to throw the wiener talk in all that.
Yeah, out. Well, you don't want to do it right away.
That's probably a good thing. Yeah. So how do you begin to figure out your own personal story and what might be interesting to other people on social media?
I think it has a lot to do with like self-reflection. I think the more that you can ask yourself questions, you know, so I've got almost a mind map with a probably several dozen different questions. You know, and some of them are applicable and some of them aren't. But I think if you can go through and say, who is the person that I'm trying to reach? You know, and this relates to sales also. So if you're describing this to a salesperson, you know, it's figuring out your customer avatar. You know, who are you selling to? And so for me, just like you guys mentioned, I'm a lot different than most consultants. You know, I think people think of consultants and you think of somebody who's clean shaven with a suit on.
Now, you're totally different from consultants. Just so we understand each other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, and when I speak, you know, don't get me wrong, I love to dress nice and wear a nice, sharp, like really great fitting suit, you know, but I don't pretend to be that either. You know, that's something I enjoy. And then when I'm at the office, I'm in a hoodie and, you know, I don't care because I know I'm going to be here the whole day getting work done. But to stay on topic, I think the way that you discover, you know, your brand or your story is by accepting your weaknesses and really just doubling down on your strengths, you know? And so like we mentioned the tattoos earlier, you know, I've got tattoos all over my hands, my fingers, the back of my neck. You know, I've got a full beard and being here in Richmond, right? And Jeff, you know this because you've been here in Richmond, but like I fit in here. But a lot of the times, you know, going outside of this city and going and doing business with people in Miami or New York or Dallas, it is a bit different. But I think that it's a strength of mine because there's no way that people are going to forget meeting me, you know, and it's been very, very seldom that I've met somebody who says that they legitimately don't want to do business with me because of my tattoos. Yeah. It's only happened to me like one time and they still ended up becoming a client later. It just took some time to win them over.
That is a crazy reason to not do business with someone.
Yeah,
I agree. I agree.
Wow.
I mean, look how painful they were.
Well, and I think of it like this. I mean, everybody's got triggers for certain things, you know. So if they have this belief of people with tattoos are this certain thing in their head, you know, they're going to relate that to me when they see me. And I can understand that. You know, I get it. You know, if they have a bad experience or, you know, maybe they have some crazy uncle who's a felon, and that's what they think of when they look at me.
That's true. But let me share this. It's obvious that the tattoos were a phase of your life and you were learning in that phase of life. And even if you still get an occasional one to fill in a gap or a blank, that was then.
Yeah.
And where you are now is you're in the suit era and you're in the speaking era and you're in the brand building era, and people have to respect what got you here. Like, dude, you, whatever happens to you in your lifetime, they can't take that top 10 thing away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
And people are going, where in the hell did that come from? Look at this fucker. He, you know, his, I can't see his hands because his arms are all covered up.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, Mr. Gino Barbaro.
The Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast catalogs our journey to becoming financially free through multifamily real estate investing.
Gang, each week we interview a guest specifically chosen for their expertise in and around multifamily real estate.
We talk you through our entire process, every victory and every misstep and everything that we've learned along the way.
What does that look like? Buy right, manage right, and finance right.
The audio podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are found.
Or check us out on our YouTube page where you'll find tons of other great content.
Okay, your book is called The Credibility Method.
It's right behind you. And hold it up so we can see it, just in case we ever play the video.
Oh, cool.
Are you proud of it?
I am.
I love that.
Of course you are. I mean, you take it out of the box. It's like, holy sh...
Yeah.
We want autographed copies, by the way.
Yeah, we do. Ours must have gotten lost in the mail.
Yeah, somehow.
I'd love to send you guys a copy.
All right, that would be awesome.
If it's not signed, we send it back, by the way.
I believe it. I'll make sure it's signed.
All right, okay. And get us your address so we can send you our books that are coming out in January.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I'll shoot that over to you guys.
Cool. So I want to talk about the book. And how can our diehards increase their credibility and become the go-to resource in their industry? Right. What are some strategies and advice that you have for them?
Of course. So we'll first kind of chat. I'll take a second to chat like why I wrote the book, right?
Sure.
Are we doing good on time?
Yeah, go
fine.
For it.
Cool. We only have another hour and a half.
Cool. So I noticed that when I would be invited to speak, everybody knows me as the digital marketing guy. So they would always say, hey, we want you to come talk about Google advertising because we don't have any speakers that talk about that. Or we want you to come talk about tracking and measuring results because we don't have anyone to talk about that. And so I would go to these events and I would talk about that stuff. But I've always followed the process of kind of introducing myself and establishing who I am before I start talking about who I know.
Right.
I mean, what I know. And I'd always find that when I would step off stage, nobody would ever ask me questions about advertising or marketing. They'd always ask me questions more like, hey, like, how did you get on stage with Grant Cardone? Hey, how did you get to this event? And hey, how did you get these people to hire you? It was nothing about like Google PPC campaigns. You know, it was more about like my story and how I solidified myself in the industry and how I landed speaking gigs and how I landed the clients that I had. And I always found that question so difficult to answer because it's like, you could have 30 minutes to 3 hours with somebody and still you can't just sit there and like explain the concept and they're going to grasp it right away. So
well, they also don't understand the work, the back work that went into it.
Right.
You know, you can't just say, well, I worked my ass off for 5 years. Now what?
Yeah.
And so, you're working 20 hours a day. So you're probably at 10 years.
Right.
Of somebody else's normal work day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's very true. So I just always found that question really hard to answer when people said, you know, they say, hey, how did you speak at this event with Grant Cardone or whatever? It's like, I don't really know how to give you that answer in a clear, concise, like little paragraph. So I really thought the easiest way for me to lay down my thoughts would be in a book, because I do. I tell my story about, you know, not being able to afford $100 a month in rent and, you know, living in this house that was literally falling apart and surrounding myself with idiots and doing drugs and getting drunk and chasing girls and being a bartender. And, you know, I literally used to collect change just to walk over to the gas station to buy a hot dog, you know, and that was like my meal for the day. It was like a hot dog and like a Monster energy drink. And every day I'd be scrounging for, you know, coins and stuff. And we would even go to the college campus because when the students would move out, they would throw stuff away. They'd throw away like bongs and laptops and headphones and furniture. I would go over there, I would collect that stuff, and then I would sell it to the thrift stores and trade up until I got whatever I needed. And that was just how I was. So to answer, like, the reason I explain that is because to go from that, you know, just 4 or 5 years ago, to being able to work with the people that I work with today and running an office, having a team, speaking at these events, writing a book, explaining that change is really hard to do because there's so many different pieces of it. Mm-hmm. So that was why I wrote the book. I thought it would be way easier for me to put my thoughts down and really explain what I was trying to say if I could take the time and really type it out. So it took me, I published the book relatively quickly. I mean, from start to finish, it probably took me about 60 days because everything that's in the book is stuff that I've kind of already talked about before. I just never put it in a process. So what I did was I wrote down a big mind map of all the beliefs and all the things that I have that I believe have taken me from there to here. Then once I got that, I kind of organized everything into what made the most sense and kind of could be grouped together. And I called it the Trek method. And so Trek is spelled T-R-E-K. And, you know, a trek is like this long, arduous, difficult journey. So I thought it was very fitting, you know, if you're going on this long trek, trying to get from, you know, where you're starting to where you want to go. And that's why I called it the Trek method. And also it stands for T, which is tear down, R, which is reinvent, E, which is establish, and K, which is kick ass, right? And so it's kind of this four-step process to really cutting out all the fat in your life, getting rid of your bad habits, cutting out the people that you don't need around you, then moving into a process where you're kind of reinventing yourself, kind of pivoting, changing to a different direction, establishing who do you want to be? What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Who do you want to be around? How can you reinvent yourself and change that first impression that people have about you? Because that was my biggest issue is, you know, people would hang up on me when I called them. People, you know, would ditch me on meetings. You know, I remember just trying to, you know, talk to friends and say, hey, let me help you blow up your Instagram, you know, and they would take it as a joke. You know, they wouldn't take me seriously. So
isn't it interesting how many of your friends call you nuts on the way up the ladder?
Mm-hmm. Always. Yeah. Yeah. Now they ask me for a job. Yeah. I always saw that quote, you know, you see those quotes on Instagram and it's like, oh, that's funny. But then, you know, as you kind of make your way up the ladder, that stuff actually happens. So I see how those quotes became a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But you actually, they have something that you do not have. A car payment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Oh,
and so you look at it from that perspective and you see yourself climbing and getting to the next level, and each there's a reward at the end of that hard work. Your reward came from this top 10 list. Next year's reward will be even greater.
Yeah,
you don't know what it is yet, but it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the works of it's not 100% official yet, but I feel pretty confident about it. I'm hoping to be speaking at a TED Talk event here in February 2019. Cool. So that'll be exciting.
That's
awesome. Looking forward to that. That's a big goal. Lining up more speaking gigs and stuff. So I hope to see a lot more of that happen. But that's what the book is about. You know, it moves into like establishing yourself. So I talk about even more like tactical tasks to complete, such as having a website. You know, even signing up to be a contributor on different blogs and typing about the things that you're excited about, even if you're like a iPhone repair person, you know, it's simple to create an account on Medium and talk about that, or, you know, find a tech blog and, you know, sign up as a contributor or reach out to the owner. And there's a lot of different tools that it takes to get in touch with those people. So I talk a little bit about that in the book. So it's a little bit of my story, but each story comes with a principle and then something to take action on, you know, whether it's a tool to download or, you know, getting access to a database to pull information on different businesses so that you can find their contact info, you know, whatever.
And you self-published it?
I did. Yeah. I'll tell you what, man, it was kind of a pain. Like it wasn't as easy.
Whoa,
as
kind of a pain or a big pain?
Oh man, it's still a headache. Like actually, if you go to Amazon and you search for the book, like I think the way that the listing is for the paperback copy still isn't even correct. So most of the copies actually just get sold directly through the website as of right now, because I'm still trying to figure out what the deal is with Amazon, because it's been a hassle.
We can help you with that.
Yeah, we should talk.
Because they're the largest bookseller in the world.
I know it.
No.
Well, I know that.
Hold on. They're the largest bookseller in the world times 100.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah. No one comes close. No one's in the same ballpark. Yeah. I described it as every day the people at Barnes & Noble go into a meeting and talk about what they did with what Amazon did yesterday, and every day Barnes & Noble and every day Amazon goes into their meeting, they don't give a shit what Barnes & Noble did.
Yeah, and that's very true.
That's the way it works. tell me one more thing. Have you ever read The Little Red Book of Selling?
I haven't, but I know it's your book.
Yeah. And chapter one is kick your own ass.
I like it.
And it will dovetail into your thought process immediately. So we'll
send that to you too.
Yeah, it'll be signed also.
So. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, we'll have to trade books. I'd love to check it.
But I think more important. Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
sorry.
It's okay.
No, you go.
So you told us the backstory for your book, and I love that, but I'm so intrigued, and I want to know, like, we have so many diehards who listen who are always wondering, like, what are some new ways, new strategies I can use to become known online, to become known as that go-to person, the go-to resource for whatever it is I'm selling.
When someone searches my shit,
yeah,
does my name
how do
up?
They find me? And so I know, like, there's a whole bookload of information, but just give us, like, one thing. Where does someone even start?
Sure. So a couple of things that really helped along the way. And I don't even know if I would describe it as like solidifying somebody as the go-to resource, but it's just one of those steps along the way, because that takes a lot of different pieces. But one of the things that I always share with people, and I ask this question on stage all the time, is I ask people, why do you not work at McDonald's or like a fast food restaurant or something like that? And dozens of people raise their hand, and they all give me great answers, and they're all right. You know, people say, "Oh, you know, it's crappy hours or crappy pay," or yeah. What were you going to say? Why do you not work there?
I couldn't afford the cut in pay.
So
I couldn't smell the fast food that well.
Yeah, but their closing question has made them billions.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Do you want fries with that?
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
a $1 billion question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, as a company, I mean, you know, they rake in the cash.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about the quality of their food. But anyway, the reason I ask that question, and people give me all kinds of different answers, but they never give me the one that I'm looking for, which is anyone can do it. Mm. Right. So if you think of that in a business sense, when I first started trying to be a consultant, I made it seem like just anybody and everybody in the world could work with me because I was dying for business. So somebody says, hey, can you help me with this? I would jump at the opportunity to say, yes, I can help you. Yes, I can help you. Yes, I can help you. I found that doing the opposite really changed things for me, you know, making sure that I had a process in place. So that way, if somebody said, hey, can you help me with this? Then I started to kind of change the narrative. And I said, well, yes, I would love to help you, but let's make sure that it's a right fit. I've got an application here for you to fill out so that I can learn a little bit more about our business before we schedule a call. And that little change fixed everything, not fixed everything, but it definitely changed everything for me. Just becoming more exclusive and putting kind of a barrier into place for people to jump over. And if you look at that on more of a macro scale, even with our agency, everybody wants to say, oh yeah, I'd love for that. Can you put me something together? And when we first started a couple years ago, we'd go back to the office. We'd put together this proposal. We'd send it over. They'd never open it. They'd never look at it, you know, and we'd have to follow up with them for months and months at a time. And nobody was ever serious. So we changed and we started charging $500 for a proposal, a refundable, you know, $500 deposit.
Yep.
Then now everybody who has a proposal in front of them, they answer our emails now and they answer our phone call because their $500 is sitting in our bank account rather than theirs. And then that way, if they decide to work with us, we roll it into the cost of their service. And if not, then we just refund it back to them. But it's just that barrier to entry that we created. So that way people that are, my buddy Ryan Steumann calls them kangaroos, right? Like the ones that can't reach their back pocket to pull their wallet out because their arms are too short. That way the kangaroos kind of stay away, you know, and you don't waste your time and energy and effort talking to people who were never going to do business with you in the first place. So I think if you're listening to this and you're an influencer or, you know, you're a mortgage lender, you know, whatever it is, I think finding a way to put a little bit of a hoop for your potential clients to jump through would improve the quality of your sales that you get, improve the quality of people that you work with, and it'll get people to take you more serious, you know, because they're used to, like, in everyday life, people are used to just texting somebody and expecting an answer. You know, they're used to just calling someone and expecting an answer, you know, and if you can kind of create a pattern interrupt with people to kind of, in a sense, kind of put them in their place and say, hey, yes, absolutely, I'd love to help you, but don't just call me out of nowhere. Let's set it up and let's make sure we go through the right process for me to be able to help you to the best of my ability. And if I can't help you, I'll do my best to point you in the right direction.
I never call them kangaroos. I call them cheap bastards. But I should have used a better metaphor.
Let's charge everyone who wants to hire us for a speaking gig a deposit. to talk to her. I freaking love that. Yeah, that is phenomenal.
I got that from Jason Swank. And I didn't get it from him. It was somebody he was interviewing, and I can't remember their name. But he brought that up. And as soon as I heard it, I immediately put it into place. And almost instantly, we noticed a difference in the quality of people that we were working with.
Wow.
The level of respect that we got, mm-hmm. you know. And yeah, that changed a lot. So that's one thing I would do immediately. You know, you could be a life coach, you know, and everybody wants help. Have them fill out an application. Have them go through a process. You know, and then use that process to craft your first impression. You know, right. there's a big difference between sending over a proposal in like a PDF document versus like we use the software to almost create a full website for our proposal that tracks the opens and what pages they're looking at, how much time they spend on the page. We spend a lot of time implementing like videos and images and, you know, downloadable case studies. So anytime they look at another agency that just sends them some stupid Google document, and then they shop around and they find us, it doesn't matter if we cost more. They're going to choose us because they see the quality of work.
Mm-hmm.
Had them go through the process. They know that we're professional. They had to put down a deposit. So they know that we must not be like joking around or just like dying for business, you know?
Right.
So I would try to think of how people can put some sort of process similar to that in place in their business.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, well thought out and well executed. All right, now here's the deal. We have to go now. But we would be interested in doing more with you.
Diehards, thank you for listening to Sell or Die. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. Give it a star on Overcast and tell a friend.
Tell both your friends. Just don't tell your competition. You can follow me on Twitter at Gittimer and Jen at Sales in Any Minute.
Send your sales questions to sellordie@gittimer.com. We'll be back next week with Motivation Monday and another amazing guest.
Until then, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And we're reminding you to get out there and sell or die.
Even if your ass falls off. Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true Sell or Diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.